what?
Flow up. Go with the flow up. That kind of a deal, or what are you talking about?
This is a closed meeting.
Committee will come to order. Today is the committee's work session on a group of bills dealing with procedural matters. And it's my anticipation that with perhaps the exception, primarily the exception of the insanity issue, these bills represent the committee's action, whatever it ultimately is, on criminal procedure reflected by House bills. That's up to the point of decision and sentencing. Okay, first bill is House Bill 2257. Linda?
Committee members, House Bill 2257 is part of what the Attorney General calls the frivolous litigation package. This one is in the area of criminal law activity. The amendments to this bill, LC Amendments House Bill 2257-1 dated 3/30/83, were distributed to your offices. If anybody doesn't have a copy, I have a couple extras. These amendments entirely replace Section 1 of the printed bill. They leave intact the emergency clause. The printed bill would have required a DA endorsement of acceptance on complaint to commence an action in justice court. As amended by Subcommittee 1 and recommended to the full committee, there is no change to existing law as to justice courts. Instead, the bill, as amended, modifies the definition of complaint and complainant's information. In both cases, requiring as part of that definition that they bear an endorsement of acceptance by the district attorney. In the case of a complaint, at present it's a written accusation verified by a person's oath filed with a magistrate and accusing someone of an offense other than a felony. That serves to commence an action and as a basis of prosecution, which would toll the statute of limitations and would be used as the accusatory instrument to which the defendant could plea in the trial, not may be based. Complainant's information is the equivalent for charging a person with an offense punishable as a felony. Like a complaint, it serves to commence an action but is not a basis for prosecution. The amendment, the intent of the Department of Justice is to discourage the filing of frivolous claims, frivolous complaints by private persons by requiring that the DA would have to see the complaint that was being filed and to endorse the complaint, presumably if it has merit, thereby screening out ones that are acceptable for filing the prosecution. The department stated that its intent by the language is that a DA endorsement would indicate that an action is not frivolous on its face, but it wouldn't bind the prosecutor to necessarily proceeding full through with the prosecution of the case. It also is not intended to require DA endorsement for a complaint to be filed in justice courts. There are separate provisions, both describing a complaint for purpose of justice court and regarding frivolous actions that are filed in justice court. I do think if a person tried to file a complaint in the, or a complainant's information in a district court, and the DA did not give it an endorsement of acceptance, that they could do the same in justice court and just be confronted by the possibility of provisions relating to frivolous litigation.
It's true.
I move House Bill 2257 as amended with Clara Pufas recommendation. Representative Courtney moves House Bill 2257 as amended to the floor with the Pufas recommendation. Discussion, Representative Springer.
I have a question, Linda. I'm sorry I didn't raise this in subcommittee, but I noticed we have an emergency clause on this, and it gives me a little cause for concern, assuming it takes effect, if the governor were to sign it immediately, if the failure to have such an endorsement would be a jurisdictional issue. I guess it's a concern that with the emergency clause, it means that there's a potential that there may be some errors or a lack of prompt or compliance that could put us into problems if there are challenges on compliance that are generated on a daily basis if the DAs otherwise aren't geared up or whoever it is bringing these matters just don't immediately move into gear.
I would think that could be a concern, whether everybody's tuned into this immediately when it goes into effect, but it would require then upon passage that be a complaint or complainant's information bear that endorsement.
See, I think that concern, as you would see it, Representative Springer, we could address simply by deleting the emergency clause.
That's correct. I'm sorry I didn't raise it in the subcommittee, but it's just something that occurred to me, and unless there's some strong reason for keeping the emergency clause, I would suggest that we might choose to delete it for the concern I've expressed.
Can I make a
comment?
I think you might want to pick a date certain. I agree with your comments, but I think you might want to pick a date certain to have it effective, because simply 90 days after the end of the session, sometimes that does throw them off.
The same trap.
I should withdraw my motion and wait till they come up with their amendment, right?
Well, I
move
it to the floor.
Oh, no, it's subject to further amendment.
January 1st, 84.
October 1, I don't know how urgent they want this.
I could perhaps suggest October 1 or January 1st, 84, just to have some date certain that would address the concern of Representative Rutherford's raised.
I think it probably would make more sense to go with a date certain. Mr. Van Dyke, do you have any reaction to those alternative dates, October 1 or the beginning of next year? Sorry to throw that out. Yeah, I saw you sitting there and I wanted to
see if I can react.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is a department bill. Chair, would you have any comments? Let's see if either one of you has any.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think this issue could be addressed probably one of two ways. We could either delete the emergency clause and pick a date certain. I would like it to be sooner than January of 84. I'd like it to be as soon as possible, because we are having these problems on a regular basis. The other opportunity or the other option would be simply getting the notification out to the DAs and to the clerk's offices of the district and circuit court, because bill means and a brief explanation of how it's supposed to operate. Perhaps even those two things in combination would prevent there being the kinds of slip-ups that Representative Springer is talking about. I don't see this as a jurisdictional issue. This is an issue about the sufficiency of the complaint. It would not be acceptable for filing without this endorsement. It's true that without the clerk's office being aware of it, they may accept some for filing without that.
I think it's an administrative issue more than anything else.
If we were going to pick a date certain, I would certainly prefer that it be something like July 1 rather than October 1 or January 1. Or if that's not sufficient time, September 1, something that would be as soon as possible and still give it time to get through the legislative process.
Well, I'm at the subcommittee's disposal. September 1 be seem reasonable?
Well, as the witness mentioned, July 1, I see a general nodding of heads affirmatively and then nodding. I see no reason, since there doesn't seem to be any opposition, not to go with the earlier date.
My reaction July 1 was that that might not be much different from an emergency clause.
Right.
From the standpoint that we're talking about. Because it could well be that, assuming this bill makes it all the way through, it might be close to July 1 before the governor gives it a push. But if Springer moves, let's just try that. Springer moves that section should be deleted and be substituted with an effective date of September 1, 1983. Objection? Discussion?
Discussion?
President Skinner?
Are we going to, will there be any problem with communication with the DA's offices and so that they might file
what used to be a complaint on September 10th, and it won't be a complaint because it won't have an endorsement on it. In case we thrown out of court after a conviction or something like that, is there any potential there?
No, Representative Scavera, this bill does not apply to complaints filed by the DA, which are covered by different subsections of 131.005. This is only citizens' complaints.
It's
complaints, citizens' complaints, and complaint of information.
Okay.
The things that the DA files would not be covered by this at all.
Okay. Thank you.
And it would apply to complaints filed September 1 or thereafter. Is that the intent, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
However, that would not be... I don't think that would be an effective date, a proper rendering of the effective date of the Act, however, would it?
Pardon?
We can work the language out. The intention of the motion, as I understand it, is to subject all complaints within the description of this bill filed on or after September 1, 1983 to the requirements of the bill.
That's the intent.
Okay. We'll refine the language for the final amendment. Further discussion on Representative Springer's amendment. Is there any objection to the amendment? Adopted. Further discussion of the bill as amended. Representative Courtney's motion. Call the roll.
Yes.
Hill.
Aye.
Lombard.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Scalera.
Aye.
Springer.
Aye.
Rutherford.
Aye.
Chairman Meyer.
Aye. Adopted. Okay, 2262.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2262 was passed on a vote of 4-2, was sent to the full committee, due pass from Subcommittee 1, was requested by the Department of Justice. This bill gives the Attorney General the power to issue his own subpoenas or subpoena deuces tecum on any person or entity thought to have relevant information or materials in any criminal investigation that the Attorney General is conducting. The subpoena may require a person to produce books, papers, other materials, give oral testimony under oath or both. The person from whom the testimony or materials is sought may go to the circuit court and move to quash or modify the subpoena if it's unreasonable or oppressive. I did have a conversation with Bill Gary at the Department of Justice as to, I think it had come up before and we discussed again the intent of the Department of Justice that if a person refused to respond, that the department could go to court on a show cause order, get the court to order the person to appear and show cause why they shouldn't comply with the subpoena issued by the Attorney General, and then if they were ordered to do so and didn't, then the violation, you have a violation of a court order punishable by contempt, right? I had talked to Mr. Gary before the meeting, and when we went over this, he said that he may want to clarify that aspect of how you would handle the whole contempt business if the person didn't respond to a subpoena. So I'm distributing amendments that he has just given me dated April 11th, 1983. There's... You go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in my conversation with counsel this morning, she pointed out that the bill in its present form cross-references to ORCP 55G, which is the rule that controls enforcement of subpoenas issued by the court. And this amendment is just intended to clarify a technical problem that may arise, because the rule that cross-references, and it was our intent that these subpoenas be enforceable in the same way as subpoenas issued by the court, says the court may enforce any subpoena that it has issued. And under this version of the bill, the subpoena would be issued by the Attorney General, not by the court. And so we suggest addition of language to make it clear that after a subpoena has been issued by the Attorney General, it would be enforceable by the circuit court for the county in which the person or entity subject to the subpoena is required to respond. And it would be enforceable in the same way as if the subpoena had been issued by that court. I think that takes away one step in the enforcement process. We don't need to get the court to enter an order requiring compliance before we can have the court issue an order to show cause, and then the person would have his hearing at that time, an opportunity to show why the subpoena ought not to be enforced. So it's really intended to clarify only a technical problem that counsel anticipated.
The chair moves the adoption of the proposed amendments submitted by the department, which have been distributed to the members, dated April 11th. Is there discussion? Objection? Okay, they're adopted. Linda, go ahead. Do you have any more?
Chairman, I'll move. House Bill 2262 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lombard moves that House Bill 2262, as amended, be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Linda, there were no other amendments adopted in subcommittee.
No, Mr. Chair, it was sent due pass.
I think we could submit. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hill.
So, Mr. Chairman, as the record indicates, when this was a subcommittee, I voted against it, and it's just a basic reason. I guess I still do not see why the Attorney General, in investigating criminal matters, should be treated any differently than district attorneys who have primary jurisdiction over criminal matters. The grand jury traditionally is, although it probably is not used very much for that purpose, is a protection for the accused. And I guess I don't see why we should depart from that for the Attorney General. I have not been able to find any situation where there's criminal jurisdiction where the grand jury is left out. And I guess I'm concerned why the different treatment. When you get into criminal matters, unlike the subpoena deuces taken that can be issued by most of the other agencies, they do not primarily involve criminal matters. And if we're going to be dealing with issues that someone could end up being incarcerated for, I think that all protection, including grand jury protection, should be afforded. For that reason, I don't support the bill.
Further discussion? Call the roll.
Representative Portman.
Yes.
Hill.
No.
Lombard.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Silvera.
No.
Springer.
No.
Buckinger.
Aye.
Chairman Myers.
Aye. Adopted. 2266.
Norm's not here. Oh, man.
Let me pass 2266 for a minute. We have some further amendments that have been developed. It may be necessary for that bill to go back to subcommittee. I don't know yet. let me ask, have those amendments been distributed to the parties who have been most concerned about that bill?
To Mr. McDonald from the Oregon District Attorneys Association has seen a copy of the amendments. Jim Henning, was it Jim Henning the other one that was?
He's
seen this version of the amendments?
No, he has not.
See, there were some, they had both seen some versions of the bill, of the amendments along the way, and I wasn't clear whether they had seen the final version, and apparently Mr. Hennings has not, because this one is more recent than the one he saw.
Why don't you, have you seen them, Marcy, have you, either of you seen them?
I just, about 2 minutes ago.
You have them now?
Yes.
Okay. Let me pass that bill for just a moment, and let's go on to the other matters that are unquestionably ready for action one way or the other, and then we'll come back and take 2366. Let's take 2369.
Pass is amended to the full committee from subcommittee one with conceptual amendments. It deals with joint trials of jointly charged defendants. Under existing law, if two or more defendants are jointly indicted for a felony, then any defendant can demand that they have a separate trial. In other than felony cases, it's up to the judge's discretion whether the trial should be joint or separate. This came in, the bill came in from the Commission on the Judicial Branch with an understanding that this is intended to be one of their cost-saving measures. The LC amendments, House Bill 2369-2, dated April 8, 1983, were intended to respond to the committee's conceptual amendments at its last meeting on the bill. To begin with, the committee had moved that the basic threshold for should be joint trials for jointly charged defendants, and that is expressed in the amendments to subsection 1 of section 1, which basically would now read, defendants who have been jointly charged or whose cases have been consolidated for trial shall be tried jointly unless the court before trial orders that a defendant be tried separately pursuant to a finding of likelihood that substantial prejudice to the defendant would result in a joint trial. There was also a proposed language to indicate that a motion for severance would be granted if the demonstration of prejudice, there was demonstration of prejudice to a defendant in a joint trial that would overcome factors of cost and convenience to the state. I believe the way that this is developed in Legislative Council's amendments, that they've included in that first subsection that there be a finding that that whether it's consolidated or not reflect that there's been a finding that there wouldn't be substantial prejudice to the defendant that would result from a joint trial. That is again repeated in section 2 of the amendments, subsection 2, that says when there are several charges against any person for the same act, person or persons for the same act or transaction, instead of several indictments, they joined in one, and on motion of the district attorney would order them consolidated unless there be substantial prejudice. I'm sorry, there's one part in here that I might have to ask a question of legislative counsel. May I have the committee's indulgence? Did he leave? Oh. The question I had was one of the other comments that the committee had made was adopted a conceptual amendment that they had to be jointly charged with the same crime or crimes. And I remember we talked about that, but now I don't remember. That was one of the conditions of being able to hold the joint trial.
I believe the answer to that, if I understand the question correctly, is...
Frank, would you state your answer?
I'm sorry, Frank Gruber from Legislative Council's office. If I understand the question correctly, you're asking where the concept of crimes rising out of the same incident basically cranks into this joint charging issue.
Actually, it wasn't just that they arose out of the same thing, but they had to be charged with the same crime or crimes. I'm wondering if we missed a communication in my request for the amendments.
Well,
is there a requirement under these amendments that the two defendants, in order for the trial to be joint, had to be charged with identical crimes? Because that's the way the committee adopted.
No, they have to charge with crimes out of the same act of transaction, which is contained in the provision, the other statute, for when you can jointly indict.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry if that's the case. I'm afraid that the amendments are lacking that one element that was adopted conceptually by the committee.
I guess I'm unclear now about then what that conceptual amendment was.
Well, it was a further restriction, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
That in order, like right now, a defendant can demand a separate trial. So this was going to limit that, but it was going to presume joint trials if certain conditions were met, and one of the conditions was that there not be substantial prejudice to the defendant as a result of joining it. Another condition was that it was going to apply if in the joint trial each defendant was charged with the same crimes, not just in the same criminal episode, but the same crimes. Like if I were charged with theft and kidnapping, my joint defendant to be tried together would also have to have those same crimes charged against them.
Well, if you were charged with kidnapping and I were charged with a burglary and it all took place in the same house and the same incident, you mean that these would not be joined?
As I understood the amendment requested by the committee, it was more restrictive than that.
What is the present scope of proper joint charging? Is it a transactional test?
I don't have that statute right in front of me, Chairman.
What was the question?
I wanted to clarify what the present restrictions on drug charging were.
Regarding to regarding the indictment, provides that when there are several charges against any person or persons of the same act or transaction, instead of having several indictments, it can all be joined into one indictment. That's a section that is amended.
Here, yeah, it's okay.
Dash 2 amendment.